Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Don't sweat the technique. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Esme just told me I look very handsome. I told her I was married, Esme. Chill out. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Mike, you're in the Hive. What's up?
Yeah, I'm talking about Jalen Green. Can you chalk up his ineffectiveness in this series to his inexperience, or is it just that he's the next James Harden?
Appreciate the call. See, I think in order to be anointed the next James Harden, you've got to be able to do James Harden things in the regular season. It's one thing to say that you led a team, a 50-win team, to be their leading scorer. It's another thing to say that James Harden was winning MVPs, perennial All-Star, and doing the things that he was doing, regardless of his shortcomings. I think that Jalen Green showed in his first playoffs a different aspect of what I've seen from his entire career as a Rocket that leads me to believe that as much as he is saying the right things right now, the things that he's said and done, I'm deeply concerned. I don't know that he's ever going to figure it all out. And that's all over. That's his whole game. That's as an NBA player. That's as a, in the playoffs. That's everything. I think there's too many signs that create way more questions than we should have answers at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't. His youth is a factor. His lack of playoff experience is a factor. I probably undersold the experience in this series, too, at the start of it. I think experience did come into play over the course of this seven-game series more than I thought it would, especially last night, especially in Game 7, especially in Game 3 when they didn't have Jimmy Butler and the Rockets, you know, should have taken advantage of that. That's the hard part of trying to dissect it. It's a hard part of, okay, was all of the struggles because he's never played in the playoffs before, or is it more than that? Is it the melting down? And whenever, you know, you look at the box score or you watch the game, you have to kind of go based on your eye test. Yes, like Lou Will said, that yes, young players in the past have had trouble their first ever playoffs, and they get way better at it as their career progresses. But I wonder if we go back on a case-by-case example of that and we watch the player as much as we watch Jalen, if we'd be like, yeah, but I still trust him going forward. To me, it's more about, like, the trust. Like, do you trust the player growing? Like, I trust Alpi getting better in the playoffs. He was more effective than Jalen, obviously, but I trust him going forward to improve. Amen Thompson, I trust him to improve going forward. Do I trust Jalen to improve? I really don't. I don't.
Here's the biggest thing, Jeremy. And you said it earlier when we were talking about the Kobe factor. How many of those guys that in their first playoff go-round were starters leading their team in scoring that had a team that won 50 games?
Probably not many.
Right. So that's the thing. If it was a guy that was coming off the bench in his first go-round as an NBA player or a very young player that also was experienced in the playoffs for the first time, I think that it's extremely understandable because they haven't really flourished to be who, you know, to show the signs that they're ready to kind of be that in that conversation of, do you have the it factor? Are you going to have be able to take your team to the next level? When you're a starter and you're the leading scorer and your team is extremely successful, and then in your first playoffs, you do what he did 6 out of the 7 games, I think you've established enough to have more in the I'm deeply concerned boat than, I just write this off as this was his first playoffs.
Same. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRP listener line. Mr. Vegas in the Hive. What's up, Mr. Vegas?
Hey, can you hear me?
Oh, loud and clear.
All right, that's good. I got some speakerphone. I just wanted to cap out these playoffs, man. I was like, I'm not disappointed. Thank the team for taking us there. It's been good. I can't get mad. I'm happy they came back and lost only because Jalen Green scored 8 points. You got Sangoon pirouetting in the lane and up under the basket all night long. Can't grab a rebound. Can't the man just get up and just dunk the ball? So somebody said, if we get Giannis and we get rid of them two, who we got? We got some hard-nosed players out there. If we get rid of the two soft ones that we gave all this money for, a lot of money for them to do that, even though Sangoon's an all-star, but it'd be nice if we can get Giannis and Sangoon. We can almost create something like the Twin Towers like the Spurs did. Good season. If we trade them, I wouldn't be mad at all. Still love the Rockets, baby.
Appreciate the call, Mr. Vegas. Give Johnny my best, if they're related. But I look at it and I say, of the two guys, yeah, I mean, look, you and I had differing opinions on the fact that I questioned when and that they did too soon the extensions for both guys. But I also get it because they didn't max them out and because they're still tradable contracts.
And you don't want to let good players walk for free.
Right, exactly. But at the same time, you look at it now and you say, okay, now we're taking the two guys that are supposed to be the two guys for the foreseeable future, and we have a ton of questions about both of them. The biggest thing is, of the two, I think Alpi did enough to where he's not going to feel it nearly what Jalen's going to feel. Because Jalen's going to have this following him around now, and it's going to be a bigger dark cloud that is going to be inescapable until the next playoffs. But in the meantime, he's going to hear about it all the time. And that's going to create the same kind of pressure that he felt that he wilted under when he got into the playoffs.
Sure. No, Alpi was more passable. Like you could, I mean, Alpi was passable. Alpi came to play. Like, there are some tendencies of Alpi that I don't like. I don't like that Alpi gripes about every single call. Mm-hmm. I don't like how he pouts when he doesn't get a call or doesn't get the ball at times and he's late getting back on defense. I think that there were moments in yesterday's game where he shied away from contact, which I find to be soft. I don't love his shot selection, like a little fadeaway from 12 feet. Hate it. One-footed flamingo shot. Oh, my goodness, how pretty a shot it is. He shoots 10% on the flamingo shot. Why do you want him to keep shooting it? Because it looks pretty? Can't stand that. I don't like him shooting threes. And we had the caller earlier. I think it was Phillip. Like, if Alpi can become a 33% three-point shooter, yes, it would help this offense. But where do I want him spending his resources this offseason? Do I want him to spend all of his time shooting a bunch of threes? Or do I want him to spend his time like on his footwork in the paint, putting on weight in the gym? I would take the latter. Now, if he can do both, now he really elevates his game. He has to be at least a 33% three-point shooter to take that shot as much as he does. He takes one every game, and he doesn't hit them very. He hit one yesterday in garbage time. But even the fadeaways, like, dude, you're not effective there. I don't like. Are you capable of making that shot? Yes, but if you're shooting it at a 20% clip, that is not helping the team. So there are areas where I don't like Alpi's game, and at moments I think he can be a little soft at times. But he showed up. He came to play. He tried hard. He had fun out there. All of those little morale words.
21-12 for the playoffs.
They went to him offensively. Like, he was a key focus. Like, when Jalen Green was a no-show, who were they going to on the offensive end? They were dumping it into Alpi and generating their offense from there.
If you tell me that you have a guy that averages 21-12 and shoots 45% from the field.
45 ain't great.
I understand that's not great, but there's more than enough to work with there. But what I was going to get to is, I don't want him shooting threes. I want him to be where he is most effective, which is in the paint. Now, you can say he missed a lot of short shots. Exactly. So all off season long, to take the next step, to be a guy we can count on more, that's where you've got to. I don't care about, you're right, I hate the flamingo shot, but the thought of him shooting consistent threes or trying to get to a 30-some percent three-point shooter, to me, isn't even something that I want to see. I understand that if they give you an open shot, at a certain point, you're going to have to prove you can make it or respect it, but at the same, but his most effective skill set that could get even better is to develop even further as a post player and in and around the basket. And I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities for him to do this offseason.
You know, he didn't spin off his right shoulder very well either. I've noticed that in this series. And maybe because Golden State magnified it, trying to, like, force him to go there, and he wouldn't do it a whole lot. Like, there were a lot of times where they were cheating his left. Like, he was backing it in. He gets it over his left shoulder and go with the right-hand baby hook, which I think is his best shot. And they were daring him to go baseline. And he would not go baseline very often. He would do it every now and then, but very rarely.
But you also realize that when whoever it was that brought up about, was it Phillip or whoever, about his three-point shot,
mm-hmm.
It's one thing to say, hey, teams were daring him to shoot the three. Golden State was daring him to shoot the free throw line shot. Golden State was daring him anything outside of 5 feet, and he struggled to make the five-footers.
Well, it's not an efficient shot.
But that's why.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Before he starts working on a three-point shot, work on what you're going to do when a team gives you a cushion from the free throw line.
Back it in and get you a right hand hook from 5 feet.
But if they're going to give you that face up and you don't feel comfortable from 10, get to a point where it's not from 10, but that you can knock that down consistently.
No, I don't want that shot. See, no, as a non-starter
think,
for me.
I think he can find, like you said, whether it's facing the basket or he faces it from the free throw line, puts it on the floor, and turns to go one way or the other so that he gets to where his sweet spots are with his shots that he's comfortable shooting.
Yeah.
But this one-handed hand grenade launching, shot-putting, knuckleball thing that he throws up anytime he's outside of 5 feet, I can't stand seeing it.
Pass the ball. I don't want him to shoot outside of 5 feet.
I thought they passed up a lot of opportunities inside the paint yesterday.
For sure they did. Alpe's a career 51% shooter, 27 from three. 27 ain't good enough. Nope. Like 20, and he's left wide open daring him to shoot because they want him to shoot that because they know a 27% shooter from three is not an efficient shot. Jabari not being able to back down Steph is unbelievable. Jabari doesn't have a very good post-up game. Like that is a big knock on Jabari, and I would agree that it is unbelievable. Jabari's more of a, quite frankly, Jabari's more of a 3-and-D guy. Like he doesn't create his own shot. He's not a great dribbler. He doesn't drive all that well. Maybe he can slash if you get the guy who's closing out on you up in the air or something like that. But Jabari is a really tall 3-and-D guy, and that's fine. That's fine. Like there's a lot of players in the NBA that are getting paid handsomely to be 3-and-D guys.
Yeah.
And there's very few 3-and-D guys who are 6'10". So he does have a unique skill set, but he does have a lot of holes in his game, which is okay. Just play to your strengths. And I do hope that he's somebody who can average 25 minutes a game next year, and as opposed to paying under 20 in almost every game in this series.
Would you consider Dylan Brooks the ultimate 3-and-D guy for right now that got paid?
I'm sure there's plenty out there.
No,
in the
I'm saying
NBA,
there's lots
yeah,
of others,
he's
but Dylan Brooks has
too.
Maximized it. If sure. you accept that as your role and you do it really well, you can get paid handsomely and be effective on a playoff team mm-hmm. by doing so.
No,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
They need 3-and-D guys.
And I think that, again, people just assume because you're a top three pick in the NBA draft that you're supposed to eventually become an all-star and become like this anchor franchise player. You can become a really good player in this league, but because the guys are coming out younger and less experienced, and in a lot of cases not even matured enough yet physically and mentally, it's all a crapshoot. It's all based on potential, and with potential you could get it. You could get big money and turn out to be great, or you could crap the bed.
Now, if you are going to be a 3-and-D guy, you do need a playmaker to be efficient offensively.
No doubt.
And that's kind of where the Rockets are. Texter, Shingun's a big. He should be 60 to 70% under the rim. Agreed. Like 50, mm-hmm. 50's not good. 45% of the series isn't good.
I think the biggest thing is we can say for like the push shots and the face the basket shots that were factored into those stats that we were reading off and talking about, that's one thing. But if you just narrowed it down to his points in the paint, his shooting percentage inside the paint, that's where it is atrocious.
Yeah. Yeah. It's can improve, no doubt. And I think it starts with being stronger. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Draymond had good things to say about the Rockets, and somebody's calling for Ime's job. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
In twilight glow, I see.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Brian's in a rain kick. I'm tired of hearing about the lack of experience as a texter. Last year we watched the Thunder become the youngest team to win a playoff series. Not getting out of the first round as a two seed is unacceptable. Ime needs to go.
That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. We just got done talking about it was the worst possible matchup for a young team making essentially their first playoff appearance with the exception of a few guys. And you play a team like that. I was harping on the experience. I was harping on Jimmy and Steph and Draymond and Steve Kerr. For a reason. They know how to get it done in the biggest moments. They know how to game plan, scheme, and adjust. And you just have to say that it's one thing that you want to be critical of some of the things Ime did or didn't do. Okay, that's going to happen in any series. To call for his job after what he's done the first 2 years coming off of Steven Silas? Come on, man. Be real.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And, I mean, the gap between 2 and 8, and really like 2 and 10 in the Western Conference, is pretty even. Like, I'm not going to make excuses for the Rockets. Lost the series, whatever. Now, the Warriors were the betting favorite to win the series at the start of the series. It's Oklahoma City and kind of everybody else in the West, at least in the regular season it was. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Anthony, you're in the Hive, Anthony. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call, guys. I wanted to talk a little bit about the offense. I feel like our offense is a whole lot of just watching somebody go one-on-one. It's four guys watching somebody dribble the ball. And I know we don't have Golden State coaching. I love Udoka, but watching this series, it was just crazy to see how much off-the-ball movement Golden State had versus our guys. And I know we don't have shooters, but I kind of don't fault the coaching staff for that either, because we drafted Shepherd thinking he would be a shooter and kind of Cam Whitmore the same way. But I would love to see an offense with more movement along with more shooters, and I'll hang up and listen to you.
Well, I appreciate the call. Look, I think that from the standpoint – of the offense, I think the regular season offense was different. I think that in this series, the offense wasn't great. I thought that at least in the regular season, there was some move. I don't think I'm too far off in saying there are very few teams. I don't think there's any team in the league that's going to execute the Golden State offense the way that they do it. There is so much movement, so much off ball movement all the time. And that's predicated by the best guy in the league to do it in Steph Curry. But I think that it's fair, because that game last night was atrocious offensively, because they've kind of reverted back when the pressure gets higher to an offense that gets stuck in the mud, that gets convoluted at the top of the circle between the top of the circle and the half court line, and blows too much of the shot clock, and then you're forced to go one-on-one. I think they need help offensively. I know that there's been talk out there that Ime needs to get another assistant coach that's just an offensive coordinator, so to speak. Regardless of how they do it, they do have to really focus on change on the offensive side of the ball next year.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a scheme thing, though. I think it's more personnel-based than scheme. I would point there more than, you know, for sure. But if I had to put one over the other, I would put personnel over scheme.
It goes back to what you said about the fact that if you've got a guy that draws a lot of attention, if you've got a guy that can facilitate with quickness and ball handling off the dribble, then everything becomes a whole hell of a lot easier. Fred, at this stage of his life, ain't blowing the doors off of just about anybody, you know? And he was a guy that used to be able to do things like that. Jalen's a guy that just doesn't have the right mentality that he wants to do that. He wants to score. So, yeah, you're probably right that player isn't on the roster right now, if that's what you're trying to do from a standpoint of facilitating better offense. But I do think that from a structure, systematic approach, that they can get better.
Like, we're talking about all the bad personnel that the Rockets have. They had the 12th best offensive efficiency in the league.
That's what I said. Offensively, during the regular season is one thing.
Well, sure, sure. Yeah. But, I mean, you're going to be kind of who you are. Yeah, it's going to be cranked up a bit in the postseason and stuff like that. But are you going to out-scheme defenses in the postseason, or are you going to out-personnel them? Like, which of the two matters more in the playoffs?
Well, I think that's a different question, because I think that of the two, obviously the personnel matters more than the scheme. But I do think that what we saw was that as inconsistent sometimes as the offense could be during the regular season, they were still effective. And for more times than not, what they ran was good enough to get them looks that were better than average. But I think in the playoffs, when you see the adjustments, when you see the blitzing once the ball gets over half court, when they see the focus on individual players, how you adjust and how you still are able to create other multiple options to come off of that to get better looks, I don't think the Rockets were good at all at doing that. I think that we talked about once Jalen had 38 points, their focus was Jalen. When they went off of Jalen, or when they started doing that, how did everybody else adjust? I don't think they did a lot of adjusting offensively.
Yeah, I mean, they would get some easy baskets at times. Like, we saw Amin cutting to the rim, Alpi finding him on a good pass, and Adams was involved, and Adams obviously needs help to get his own baskets or rebound missed shots. But I think you can point to their offensive efficiency during the regular season and say that it's more personnel-based than scheme-based. Like, if Fred VanVleet is limited as a point guard, if Jalen Green's super inconsistent, if Dylan Brooks is only a 3-and-D guy, if Amin Thompson is only a guy who can finish at the rim, if Alpi has his limitations and then your bench is your bench, I would say the 12th best offensive efficiency in the NBA with the guy with a team full of offensive issues is pretty good.
I'm not taking away from what they were able to do on the in the regular season, but I do think that from the standpoint of you got to have guys that want to do the right thing too. And Golden State's offense, like I said, it's on a level all by itself because they got all series long easy baskets after defensive breakdown baskets to where that's not fair to compare to them. But I think that short of guys that wide open, you have to have players that are not only able to do the things you're talking about, but then are willing to throw the ball to other guys and do the things necessary to get those points. I think that they, in order to do that more efficiently, especially come postseason, but I think that there's a player or two that's not on this roster that needs to help if the offense is going to stay the same.
That would say that it's more personnel-based then.
Probably right.
Yeah. Now I think it's also very tough to take one series and be like, this is a very difficult, like, this is a very broad issue. Because it might just be an issue against Golden State. Like, it might be, well, they're so good defensively that they're able to take you out of this and that, where other teams in the NBA couldn't take you out of this and that. And now we're making these very, like, holistic thoughts of, like, well, this is where the Rockets are awful. Well, what if Golden State's just really good in that area?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Everybody's focused on how efficient Golden State's offense is. Rockets' defense took them out of a lot of things. That game was mucked up on both ends of the floor last night, and for a majority of the series, it could get that way. But you're talking about a team that's one of the best, and since Jimmy Butler joined that team, the best efficient defensive team in the league.
Yeah.
So that's hard. But do I think that overall, whether it's so that you get players to play a different style or understand a little bit more, do I think that the offense could be tweaked and could they do make changes to it? Yes.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. Texture says it's also their first playoff series. It is that. Here was Draymond Green after the game yesterday with actually some praise to the Rockets.
I want to give a lot of credit to that team down there. Ime, the way he had those guys fighting. I gained a lot of respect for that team throughout this series. One of the tougher series I've played in, personally. But that's a young team to be reckoned with. And I told myself I was going to talk crazy because they have been talking crazy all series and on the internet. But I gained so much respect for those guys. Şengün is an incredible player. The way Fred VanVleet and Steven Adams led those guys, they had no experience. And they led them, took us to the brink. That team's going to be a force to be reckoned with. And I hope they understand it. You know, things can change fast in this league. You're only on the up until you're not, you know. But they got something promising that they can continue to build on. Jabari Smith, incredible. He played like a vet this whole series, getting his spots, knocking big shots down. A lot of respect for those guys.
High praise for Draymond.
Definitely, and I think that leads to the notion that Jabari should have been playing more. And maybe Tari should have been playing a little bit less.
Yeah. I think you're about to say more. Yeah,
No.
I was going to disagree with you there.
Look, Tari's a guy that became more expendable to me as that series went on. Because I just think everything was magnified. I don't think he makes smart basketball plays. I think offensively, he's not who he thinks he is. And I think that he makes some bad decisions there as well. He's an above-average defender. He's really good in transition and on the break and finishing. But he's a guy that I could do without.
I think he pressed in the moment, too. Like, I think that the first playoff series impacted him quite a bit. Like, when he got to the free throw line yesterday, like, he clanked those two off the front rim. Like, not even
brutal.
Close.
Yep.
So that was frustrating. And like, he let Draymond blow by him right there. Like, he had a really bad sequence where I think he took a bad shot, missed a couple of free throws, and then let Draymond blow right by him because he was out of position. Yeah, I was a little frustrated with him yesterday. Easy to compliment a team who's you just beat like a drum. That is true. It's a good point. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to the Astros. Good, bad, and the ugly. More ugly and bad with the Astros series in Chicago against the White Sox. What is your good, your bad, your ugly? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Monument Chevrolet is always a good. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, you need some Monument Chevrolet in your life. They are the dealer that you can trust. It's always annoying going to these dealers and you're not comfortable. You feel at unease because you don't know if the dealer's taking advantage of you with the prices that are too high, the add-ons, whatever the case may be. You just don't feel comfortable there. You don't feel confident there. That's not the case in Monument Chevrolet. You can trust them because they're transparent, no hassle pricing, and you're going to get your car shopping done fast, too. Monument Chevrolet has been serving the Houston area for 50 years. They've helped generations of families get into new vehicles, and they continue to come back to Monument Chevrolet because they trust Monument Chevrolet for all those reasons we just mentioned. Transparent, no hassle pricing. They don't feel like they're getting taken advantage of. It's a family feel at Monument Chevrolet. It's a friendly atmosphere, good people. The culture there is fantastic. If you're looking for a vehicle for your business, that's another area where Monument Chevrolet can help you. In fact, they're one of the best dealerships nationwide in commercial vehicle sales. A huge selection of work trucks, vans, SUVs. Monument Chevrolet has the perfect vehicle for businesses of any size or inventory. Get a fair deal, a fast deal, an easy transaction without wasting your time in these aggravating, stressful negotiations. No tricks. No time wasting, no hidden charges. If you've been waiting to upgrade your ride, now is the time to do it. Visit them online, monumentchevrolet.com, monumentchevrolet.com, or just go visit them in person. Their dealership's massive. You can't miss it. 225 and Beltway 8 at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
ESPN 97.5. We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Think anybody else is catching on? Be safe out there.
Sad weather. Tomorrow, too, 80% chance.
Really? I got a ball game to call. I need to get out of here. What's the hour by hour look like? Lightning. Yeah. I don't want to get banged.
So we might get you for the full show tomorrow?
I got to tell you,
you're lucky.
That term used that way, I had no idea.
Have you seen it more?
So Joe George, because you had texted all of us, and then Joe said that banged is a term for a canceled game. I was like, okay.
Have you seen it other places, though? Because I see it other places. Like, I saw it yesterday.
I saw it yesterday
that the game was banged, the White Sox Astros game. I mean it's common. It's common vernacular. Maybe they don't use it in softball though.
Yeah, it was just
they don't use it for the glamour girls
in that way.
Yeah. All right. Good, bad, ugly from the Astros weekend. Astros start a series in Kansas City today. If you haven't heard the news, Yordan Alvarez has been placed on the what are we calling it now? The IL?
Yeah, injured list, yeah.
Yeah, not the IR, the IL. It's hard for me to make that change. I've been conditioned on the IR.
Well, the switch in baseball was DL to IL.
That's right,
we
DL.
We can't use disabled list now.
That was the thing? Mm-hmm. It made the disabled unhappy?
I guess. I'm not sure.
They don't care about the injured?
Not as much.
Soft. Yeah, so anyways, Yordan Alvarez is on the 10-day IL. It's retroactive to, you know, over the weekend because he didn't play in all those games. But good, bad, ugly, Astros dropped 2 of 3 against the White Sox. Blankers, what you got? Bad and ugly, of course, we spoon begin.
So we're starting with bad and ugly?
Yeah, they lost the series. Yeah,
I know. I mean, look, my ugly is what continues to be the whole Taylor Scott thing. I'm done. I've said, I understand, I don't care if he's out of option. I don't care what happens to him.
DFA him, huh?
Yeah, he just needs to go. Like, I know in other cases with Montero and others, we're concerned because there was financial, you know, aspects to this. Taylor Scott just has to go. Like, he has the one good inning, and then he comes back and just blows up. And you're like, well, there goes that game. And it's happened over and over again. As much as he was good in the first half of last season, it's gone. And right now for this team, I don't need to see him on the mound anymore. So that's my first ugly and bad is that he was terrible.
I'm surprised you led with Taylor Scott.
Why?
No, because there was a lot of bad over the weekend. I mean,
that's my ugly. My ugly.
I was looking at...
Ugly is that and losing to the White Sox 2 of 3.
Sure, yeah. That goes without being said. To dissect the Taylor Scott thing, I was looking at his numbers today. Every Monday I go look at their numbers to kind of see what they're doing, blah, 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 blah. FIP is a big... pitcher, you know, stat that people like to use. I think it's overrated. I think it's ridiculous stat. But his FIP last year and this year are almost the same. So, like, last year he was super lucky, and this year he's been super unlucky, Taylor Scott.
Yeah, I just, it's one of those, and I've had several others throughout the last couple of years where you just look at them and I just get the queasy feeling of, oh God, this is going to go south in a hurry.
So you just want to flat out get rid of them?
Yeah.
I mean, they're carrying some guys right now that aren't great.
No, but I mean, look, for as much as you didn't have to give anything up for him.
No, it wouldn't cost you anything.
Yeah,
sure.
And he might have just had one of those freak of nature years last year at the start of last year. But for whatever the reason, I believe that Ort's going to get better. I believe that whether Whitley comes back or not, that you have other options. I think King has been very, very good.
That's the thing is, like, who would come up for the minors to take a spot? Like, that would be the conversation. And, like, I'm not saying that I'm, you know, dying on the Taylor Scott Hill. I'm okay with DFAing him. I like what they're doing where they've kind of demoted him and lower leverage, stuff like that. Maybe it is unlucky and they can figure it out. But I do think his leash is short, though. Like, if this keeps happening and July 1 rolls around, I think you'd be DFA.
He's essentially a very, very inexpensive version of the Montero situation, where you take him from high leverage to lower leverage to I don't need him in any leverage situations and mop-up duty until you figure out you can't deal with it anymore. But that's not good. Obviously,
Logan Van Wyer, Taylor with an E. Scott.
I'm not big on him either. So
I mean, these are the conversations.
Yeah, I know.
Nick Hernandez, go Cougs, or Taylor Scott?
From an experience standpoint, it should be Taylor Scott. But it's not for me. Like,
How dare you insult my Nick Hernandez like that?
That's what I'm saying. I think from a standpoint of, would you rather hope that Taylor Scott finds it or think that you can continue to work with a Nick Hernandez to be better than he has been? I would probably lean at this point from as much as I've seen this year of Taylor Scott. I'd probably roll with Nick Hernandez.
Maybe that's the move, though, when Forrest Whitley gets back or healthy.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, he's the and if King or Scott rather keeps pitching like that, then they just DFA him to make some room. Or when Van Wy's eligible to return, maybe they can get rid of Scott.
Yeah,
I think his leash is probably longer than what you're given, but I could see him being DFA'd by the summer if he keeps pitching like this.
Man, Altuve was 2-14. Altuve is struggling mightily.
That was one of mine, for sure.
Went from a almost 300 batting average to 260s in a heartbeat, and he is scuffling.
Do we want
to
have the conversation?
OPS is down to 679.
Do we want to have the Altuve conversation?
If you want to.
Getting older?
Like, this is the
downfall? Is that what you're saying?
Let's,
Maybe we earmark this for tomorrow?
Let's put this in the vault.
Yeah, save it for tomorrow.
Let's put this in the vault.
Gusto and Okert yesterday were...
They couldn't hold the baseball. It was wet.
It was terrible.
It was a bad decision by the umpires.
It was terrible.
Yeah, but I blame the weather.
Okay.
Blame the weather. Just to jump in, because it's a good segue
for my ugly.
Why in 2025, when all these teams pretty much have their own planes or a way of getting their hands on a plane, why are we making games official in the seventh inning stretch?
Oh, I hate that.
I did the math on this, you know, denominator by the numerator divided by the denominator type of deal. This would be like ending an NFL game with a minute and 43 left to play in the third quarter. Could you imagine if we were just, outside of DeMar Hamlin, could you imagine if we just ended a game at the 133 mark of the third quarter because it was raining heavy and there was lightning in the area? Could you imagine that? It would never happen.
See, here's the thing.
Never happen.
Baseball's the only sport that does it.
It's ridiculous.
I was thinking about it as they kept talking about the fact that the rain was imminent and they didn't know when it was going to clear up. You still have them coming to Houston later. I know it's not ideal, but you still have the ability in a three-game series or two- or three-game series when the White Sox come here that you could finish that game.
Well, the White Sox wouldn't allow it to be resumed in Houston.
I don't think it's a norm, but I think that it's a possibility. I think it's been done before. But I'm with you. I hate the fact that you're ending a game after seven innings.
It's ridiculous. Well, it's the last time they're going to Chicago. I don't care. Let them off day. Let them fly up there for a few innings. It's not my expense. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. Stay there until the rain clears. All they did was fly to Kansas City. You're going to tell me it rained there the rest of the night? Maybe it rained there the rest of the night. I don't care. Figure out a way. You're not ending an NFL game with a minute 43 left to play.
Literally, they would be an hour and a half by bus.
An hour and a half. Finish it today.
For the Astros, over. I mean.
Play at noon. Finish the game at noon. Fly to Milwaukee. Play by night. Yordan Alvarez hops on a plane, hits a home run, flies home at night.
Yeah.
Ending a game in the seventh inning stretch. It is absurd. It's ridiculous. What else you got?
I mean, not that it was bad. Fromber wasn't great.
No, he was bad.
And it's starting to concern me more and more that as much as, you know, we had the conversation about – and people were worried about who you call your ace or not. Brown is head and shoulders your best pitcher, but Fromber's supposed to be right there with him. And Fromber's starting to worry me a little bit in terms of the fact that he ain't great. He doesn't seem to be getting better. The fact that Brown, you have other options too, to where I wonder if they're going to start considering more and more, and I don't think you're going to get much for him as much as you would, obviously, but I wonder if at a certain point do they start shopping Fromber.
I think that's premature, and I would disagree. I think you would still get a lot for Fromber.
Even in his contract year?
Yeah, he's still really
rental?
Good. I mean, absolutely. He'd be one of the most talented pitchers available.
Okay.
Maybe the most talented pitcher available.
Okay. Well, I'm not there yet, but I'm just not happy with how he's pitching all year.
No, we're still not doing it. I mean, yeah, this is 2 months away.
Not only that, but why trade him at his lowest possible point? Like, if there are people who are on Joel's side of thinking, oh, maybe he's slipping, like, why trade him at that point? I mean, you might as well wait it out.
I'm not saying doing it now, but it's just he hasn't impressed me with the way he's pitched in a contract year, the way I thought he was going to pitch.
That's fair.
And so I have concerns about how he's pitching. And because you're going to start getting some starters back, your rotation is going to get deeper. They're going to go to a six-man soon.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to like force Ryan Gusto out of the into the rotation at the expense of Fromber.
No, I don't think he's going anywhere in the rotation either. I'm just saying, I haven't been very in terms of bad. He was bad. I haven't been impressed with Fromber for most of the year.
Yeah, Fromber was on my bad. Jordan Alvarez I had on my bad even before he got placed on the IL today, just because he's an enigma. You never know when those hands are going to get achy. Those 80-year-old hands got a little achy, landed on the IL. And then I had Lance McCullers as one of my bad, too. Very shaky in that second inning. Forced the Astros to go to the bullpen earlier than they wanted to. Maybe even cost them the game. But he wasn't very sharp in that second. He was also one of my good, for the record. Great story. One of only two pitchers, according to my extensive research, to have a Tommy John, a UCL internal brace, and a flexor tendon surgery. He and Walker Buehler, only pitchers currently in baseball. So tip my cap that Lance returned, but he was pretty bad in that second inning. Very lucky to escape.
Now, if the glasses have full side of it, you're hoping that's just get that out of the way, get that first one back out of the way.
We're talking about this weekend.
Right, but yes. This is one of the reasons why you got to show me him consistently pitching against major league hitters.
His stuff was very meh.
That's why I was not quick on the scale or otherwise how we were talking about it to be excited about Lance McCullers.
His location? He was leaving sliders.
Yeah. Boobs. Location was bad. I thought the sinker moved well, but you're right. The location was pretty bad.
It was brutal.
I think he got lucky to not give up any runs.
Very lucky to not give up runs. Appreciate the story. The journey was my good. His actual performance for a big league pitcher in that game was pretty subpar. He threw 40-something pitches in the second. 40. Yeah. Now, he did get 3 shutout innings. Pretty lucky there. But, yeah, he was one of my bads. What goods do you have?
Look, from a good perspective, you start with Jake. Jake was 7-for-9 in the series. Jake had the massive game on Saturday, the 4-for-4 and the 2 bombs and all the bases and everything else. But DeCenzo continues to hit the baseball. DeCenzo just continues to be a guy that seems like he is solidifying more and more that he needs a place in this lineup on a regular basis. And Pena is the leadoff hitter. Yeah, 4-for-14 ain't great, but Pena was better than most on a team that isn't hitting the ball a whole lot. So those were my three in terms of – and Hunter Brown, I think, too. We can't expect that he's going to – shut everybody down. You can. I don't. I mean, the fact that he only gave up, 3 runs, but he had 9 Ks, gave you another 6-inning start. I thought he did fine.
They were all in the first inning, too. I had Hunter Brown's innings 2 through 7 as one of my goods. First inning was ugly. I had Jake Meyers there as well. He is that's the franchise record for total bases in a game, 13.
I had heard that.
He tied the franchise record. Yeah. I think Jordan's one of them, maybe somebody else. There's only 5 players in the history of the game, the entire history of the game, to have 2 homers, a triple, and a double in the same game. Jake Meyers is now one of those 5 players.
Really?
Jake Meyers has done something offensively that only 4 before him have done. In baseball history, there's only been 5 players now that have went 4-for-4 in a game with 2 home runs, a triple, and a double. Jake Meyers did it Saturday. He joins the illustrious list of Ryan Howard in 2010, Chet Labs. In 1941, Chet Labs. You never heard of Chet Labs? He's an all-time great. Johnny Mize in 1939.
Oh, of course.
And Jimmy Fox in 1933.
Myers, Howard, Labs,
Fox. How dare we ever talk poorly about Jake Meyers, who is one of only 5 players in the history of the game? So you go 4-for-4 with two homers, a triple, and a double in the same game.
Top five player all time.
Do you know who leads the Astros in OPS?
Jake Myers.
Jake stinking Myers, which is more of a testament to the Astros than it is Jake Myers. And then Yiner coming around a little bit. Any good bad jokes we didn't cover there, Brian?
One bad that you guys didn't mention that I had, because I shared your Fromber, Taylor Scott, and Altuve. But Christian Walker, 3-for-13, no walks, not really doing a whole lot. And then I shared all your goods. Mines were Yiner on Friday, and then Jake and Hunter Brown.
There you go. Good, bad, ugly. Astros start series in Kansas City here coming up soon. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Car wrecks of the day. What are yours? 713-780-ESPN. Being a homeowner comes with a lot of responsibility and a lot of cost. Owenwill is here to help you with both those things. Let them take some things off your plate, but also save you some money. Do I got your attention? A lot of homeowners are overpaying on property taxes, and I don't want it to be you. No member of the Hive should be overpaying on property taxes. Head to Owenwill.com, sign up in less than 3 minutes, and their experts will be fighting for you. Their cutting-edge technology can start saving you money with no upfront cost. Huh? How about that? Put your property tax savings back in your pocket. Take a vacation. Go out to a nice dinner, whatever you want to do. Owenwill handles it all from start to finish. They deliver top results, no upfront cost. You only pay if you save. There's no risk. It's all reward. Why aren't you doing this right now? Owenwill levels the playing field, eliminates the concern of paying too much on property tax for the everyday home and property owner like you and like me. 86% of Owenwill's customers receive a reduction. The average customer saves over $1,100, a comma in your savings. Where else are you getting that? The deadline to protest is May 15th. Coming up soon. Do not run out of time. Save money on your property taxes with Owenwill. Sign up in less than 3 minutes. Start that protest today at Owenwill.com. That's O-W-N-W-E-L-L, Owenwill.com.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Give me your f***ing bone, you prick. Where's my f***ing money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Car wreck of the day. Coming up, 6 o'clock, Soccer Matters. Glenn Davis in the house. Make sure you're tuning into that. Good hour of radio. Brian, you don't talk much on that show, huh?
Occasionally, Glenn will
ask. You chime in? A little tactics?
Oh, he does.
No, I've not on soccer, but sometimes he'll ask me about music. Or if he's trying to make a comparison to other sports, he'll ask me to weigh in.
What's your favorite football formation?
They play with 11?
They do.
3-3. I don't know what they have. They've
lined
it up.
I'm a 4-4-3 guy. They don't count the goalie in their formation.
Oh, okay. Right, right.
I'm a 4-4-3 guy. No, 4-3-3. My bad. 4-3-3.
I'm more of a 4-2-5 guy.
I like four guys on my back line. I like three midfielders, and I like three guys up top.
I
like it. What's your car rank of the day?
We got several. Obviously, the Rockets goes without saying. We talked about them in the majority of the show. Let's start with James Harden, 7 points in a game 7 to show that he still isn't anything but non-playoff James.
No good.
Ted Cruz showing up for another Houston sporting event.
I didn't see a picture from there.
I don't think he was there.
I think Lance had it and somebody else or something.
There's been some fake news that I think Lance fell for.
I hope that's true. But my biggest one was, if you didn't catch this over the weekend, umpire Bill Miller had one of his calls reviewed. And his mic stayed hot, but I appreciate the passion.
Yeah.
Durant hitting second, hitting third. Here he comes, trying to score. Here's the throw. He dives. He's safe.
See that tag right there? With the
After review, the call on the field is overturned. The runner is out. Minnesota retains.
So it is 6-1 as the call is overturned at the end of 8. Red Sox ahead 6-1.
And saw that too.
Yeah, it was the umpire's mic. He forgot to turn it off.
Yeah.
He was cussing at himself for missing the call. I actually don't think it's a car wreck. I don't think it's a car wreck. I think it's a. Now maybe leaving the mic on.
Car wreck is leaving the mic on.
Yeah, I guess that could be
I appreciate the fact that he was passionate about doing his job the right way, that it bothered him that he missed the call.
Same. I tip my cap to that umpire for that. My nomination for car wreck of the day is a guy who drives an actual car. Jack Doohan is going to be replaced by Alpine 6 races into the F1 season.
Who?
Jack Doohan.
Joel, have you heard of this guy?
No, sir.
Okay. We don't keep up with the great sport of F1.
Keep up with soccer either.
It's because you guys are or unsophisticated.
Call me what you want.
Uncivilized.
I'll wear that.
Without the Nixon cut of a blade.
Thank you, Jim Rome.
So, no, that was Scottie Pippen in the Gillette commercial.
I know, but they played that on the Rome show all the time.
So, Jack Doohan, my nomination. Who's yours?
I'll just make it Jalen. Another no-show in Game 7.
Yeah, was a no-show.
People are starting to call him Jalen Harden.
It's too early.
That'd be improvement.
All right, who's winning?
Rockets in general?
Yeah, Rockets.
I think Jack Doohan.
Nah.
Half a dozen races, he's being
sacked. We got both, Brian. We're good here.
Rockets win. They didn't win the series, but they won Cartwright of the Day. He does it for us. Thanks to Brian for the hard work. He's blank on Branham. Soccer Matters, Glenn Davis, right now on ESPN 97.5. Goodbye.
ESPN 97.5.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.